National security. That's been a large part of the political drama that's going on around town this week. Threaten our security, and we're ready to compromise some of our most sacredly held values. For you personally, what makes you feel secure? An alarm system? A camera? The government? The courts? Your pension fund? Your health insurance? The banks and the financial system? Your family? All of the above? How about God? Jesus' friends visiting with him in Jerusalem, they pointed to the enormous and magnificent temple built of stone blocks that were as big as shipping containers as a sign that God would protect them forever. God would never let God's own temple be destroyed, right? As long as they stayed right with the temple, God would protect them. Well, the prophet Malachi, 500 years earlier, warned anyone who would listen, which wasn't any more folks than listen to the truth today, warned them that that's what would happen because that's what had happened before when the Babylonians had rejected God's values and that first temple was destroyed by the Babylonians. And Malachi said, if you keep treating the temple like a magic charm, ignoring the God that goes with it, it's gonna happen again. And only God, coming in righteousness, will save you. The temple gave the people in Malachi's day a false sense of security then. And Jesus says that it was giving them a false sense of security in his day. And we still hear today from Jesus that the same warning applies to us. We still think that terrible things won't happen to us as long as we live right, eat right, vote right, live in a democracy, treat people well, make intelligent choices, and follow, in short, whatever gods of that our lives decree will protect us. Jesus came to the temple in Jerusalem, the center of accepted teaching and decrees, and he came and declared God's intentions, and he was rejected. And so today he warns his disciples, and just as he warned his disciples them, not to be deceived at how imperishable, how permanent the temple looks. It will be destroyed, he says, and God will not intervene to save it. And no matter how faithfully you serve God and follow me, he says, don't expect God to intervene and save you either. Voting for Jesus is a vote for suffering. You've probably seen some of those cartoons where a prophet figure carries around a sign saying, "The end is near." Cartoonists have made hay off of apocalyptic predictions. One I saw had an apocalyptic candidate being asked what he was promising the voters. "Suffering and end times," was the answer. Well, Jesus is that candidate. A vote for him is a vote for suffering and end times. He promises us that there will be wars and great earthquakes and in various places famines and plagues. And as for you, he says, they'll arrest you and persecute you and hand you over into prisons. If you've chosen to follow Jesus, if you voted for him, don't say you weren't warned. Discipleship is not a walk in the park. Which brings to mind another cartoon I saw. This was Hagar the Warrior Viking cartoon, where Hagar is rallying the troops with a repeat after me cheer, went, "I am a Viking warrior," and the army all shouts back, "I am a Viking warrior," waving their weapons. And then Hagar chants, "And I will fight to the death for what I believe." And there's a long silence. And Hagar says, "So why aren't you repeating after me?" And one of the Vikings, speaking for them all, says, "Hagar, the men would like to change that to, I will fight hard until it's time for dinner." We'll work hard at discipleship, Jesus, but on a reasonable scenario. It reminds me of that military recruiting poster and those ads that extol the virtues and benefits of being part of a team with a laudable mission where you're going to learn valuable skills. And the poster calls you to that patriotic mission by saying, "Uncle Sam wants you." It neglects the small print, wants you to maybe die. And history tells us that Jesus's predictions did come true. The temple is destroyed by the Romans 40 years later, blown to smithereens. And the disciples and the Christians who joined them later, like Peter and Paul, James and Stephen, they're hauled before tribunals and courts, imprisoned and executed, all described in the book of Acts and in Roman secular histories. No wonder early Christians wanted desperately for Christ to come again and save their bacon. And no wonder that people have tried to make the end times come by trying to be better, do the right thing, the right way, in the right order. And yet, we note that all those end time signs are still with us. And nothing changes. There is no point in looking at events, man-made or natural, to predict Christ's coming, and nothing that we can do will alter God's timetable. Jesus tells us to let go of trying to control things and just do the right thing. That's what Elizabeth of Hungary, the saint we celebrate today, did when this widowed mother of four small children opened a hospital. And that's what the writer of the biblical book of Thessalonians advises. The end is coming, he says, but don't rely it coming on your definition of soon. Get to work. It's centuries off. And that's good advice to those who think that environmental concerns or concerns about what will happen to our world, like climate change, those that think that, oh, well, the consequences of that are so far off, Christ is going to come again with a new creation before any of that gets serious. No, says Jesus. Don't expect God to bail you out. God will be present, God will help you, but you can't abdicate your responsibility. And lip service doesn't count, neither do good intentions. Malachi berated the people who thought that as long as they showed up for church, even if they played with their phones or the equivalent the whole time, and who gave their leftovers as offerings, well, you know, God wouldn't notice. Discipleship isn't easy, but it comes with a promise. The promise that God's Spirit will be there to guide us and support us. Jesus says, the Spirit will give you the words to say, because in any particular context, as the centuries come and go, things will be different. needs will change. And what applies in the case of before one governor in first century Palestine will be different in 21st century America. And since we can't know the future, we can't tell those who will come after us what they should say when their faith and their discipleship is challenged. What we can know is that Jesus' presence is sure in whatever we may suffer. And you will suffer, because being right isn't going to save you. But Jesus will. He promises that even though you're tortured and killed, not a hair of your head will be hurt. How can that not hurt, Jesus? Well, Jesus himself is the example. Jesus was crucified, and yet his true self was raised. And that's what he means. Your real self, the core of who you are, cannot be harmed by whatever the world throws at you. The gospel promise is that even if your worldly identity as sister or father or scientist or volunteer and all the things you've piled up as monuments to your life, when all of that is stripped away, you, the you that is the real you, the child of God, that you is not hurt and lives whole forever. And for that, we can say, thanks be to God. Amen.